Welcome, everyone, to episode 192 of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to preview the NBA's Christmas slate of games, highlight some of the big storylines and matchups that you should keep an eye out for. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is my very stable genius of co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. It's Christmas Eve over here, so when I told my wife that I would be podcasting with you, she was like, of course you would. That's yeah. I know who you are. That yeah. is fine. I love you either way. Just remember that.
I appreciate, as always, her generosity with your time. I wish we could have gotten this one out earlier, but I've been working the last couple days, unfortunately, so... We're going to a belated Christmas Day preview special that you'll have like 12 hours to listen to before the Christmas stuff actually starts. And then you could just
hashtag
laugh.
Evergreen.
Yeah, right. Then you could go back and laugh at how wrong we were with all of our predictions, which is I think most of you do anyway. So it'll be great. Let's just dive right in. We got five games on Christmas Day. And, you know, usually you play the Grinch. And during the holiday times, but I'm going to be honest, like, I'm not very hyped about these games either. Like, they look...
Wait, are you telling me you're not looking forward to watching Enes Kanter, like, going to the post?
Yeah, I'm going to start my day with a rousing dose of the New York Knicks. I'm very excited. A lot of these games looked better in theory 2 months ago or 3 months ago when the NBA came up with the schedule, so I can't really fault them, but... I have some remorse about some of these matchups, which we'll go into. So
yeah,
let's start with the first game. Milwaukee Bucks at New York Knicks. As you alluded, the New York Knicks have no business being here on Christmas Day, aside from the fact they just play in a giant market and they're a super marketable team. Maybe the NBA was hoping Kristaps Porzingis was going to be back in time. That's the only other possible explanation I have here.
Well, I have a different explanation.
Okay.
Giannis Antetokounmpo, first Christmas Day game, first Christmas Day game in the Garden. Yep. I think the NBA were betting on the Knicks being a tire fire.
Right.
And then on Christmas Day, that they would just unleash Giannis upon the Knicks.
Yeah.
So, and I think they have a point if that's the mindset, because as you pointed out to me prior to us recording, Mario Hezonja dunked on Giannis pretty hard.
Yep.
And, you know, there were a whole debacle, and Giannis was like, oh, I'm going to basically murder you next time I play you.
Right. There was a step over, I believe. Shades of Iverson over Tyronn Lue.
Right. Yeah. Just the international version.
Right. And yes, as you alluded to, Giannis did not take kindly to that and said, basically, like, I'm going to remember this after the game, and we're back here in 3 weeks. So.
Right. Yeah. And he has, like, a very modest career high, Giannis is. Mm-hmm. I think it's 44. So, I'm gonna be real with you for a second. And I'm gonna go all out hard. 60.
60 on Christmas Day.
60 on Christmas Day.
I like it. I mean...
Only if the Knicks keep it close.
Yeah,
so, this is the first time. Right. This is the first time I'm going to be sitting there rooting for, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. knocking down shots. I don't even know if he's healthy. I haven't watched the Knicks for a couple of weeks.
Right. Kevin like, Knox.
Kevin Knox. Yeah. Like, just keep it close, Knicks. So Giannis can get his 60.
Right.
I'm there. I'm 60.
Yeah. I mean,
50 is just too low.
They did. The Knicks beat the Bucks a couple of weeks ago in overtime. Mm-hmm. So
added fuel.
Yeah, so there is hope. Yeah, at the Garden. So there is hope that maybe they can keep it competitive. I mean, Kevin Knox has been playing better as of late. He was like, you know, he got hurt early in the season, and then Fizdale has just been changing his starting lineup pretty much every game. But it seems like Knox has finally started to get into a little bit of a rhythm. So he had 26 against the Knicks. He came off the bench that game.
The Bucks?
Oh, yeah, sorry, against the Bucks.
Yeah.
Was second on the team that day to Emmanuel Mudiay, who had 28, and then Hardaway had 21 in 47 minutes. This was an overtime game, so it wasn't Fizdale is not running Tom Thibodeau rotations. Do not worry.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, this. I think you're right. The Hezonja revenge factor is definitely, like, honestly, this is one of the games I'm most excited about just because of, like, the potential for Giannis to be so petty. And also, like, the Knicks have a terrible defense. I think they're last of the league or second to last of the league. And the Bucks have either the best offense or the second best offense in the league. So, like, there will be points in this game. This is not going to be a defensive-minded game, at least on one side of the court. Like, the Bucks are, I think you're right. Giannis, especially, you know, given the history of Madison Square Garden, like, I think he's the next in line. Like, you know, Kobe and MJ and LeBron and Steph. Right. All of these superstars have iconic performances at the Garden at some point in their careers. Tomorrow this might be it. Yeah, it might be it for Giannis.
And I just found out something. Okay. Mitchell Robinson, New York's leading shot blocker and interior defensive presence, is out. This is going to be like Giannis going to the rim on like 50 or 60 drives. He's just going to take it every time. Like, who's there? Like, Noah Vonleh? Yeah. Like, who's going to be there?
Noah Vonleh and Enes Kanter.
Oh, God. Oh, go get yours, Giannis.
Yeah. Straight up layup line. It's going to be great.
I love it. And this is why it's actually my favorite, you know, game. I made fun of the Knicks right at the beginning of the show.
Right.
But at the same time, this is the game I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah. I mean, I just enjoy Giannis. Like, seeing this version of Giannis unleashed is really, I mean, it really is incredible. And he's one of those guys where it doesn't matter who he's playing or when he's playing. Like, you just have to tune in to watch him. So for that reason, you know, I wish he was playing a better opponent so we could actually have a chance of seeing him in the fourth quarter, which doesn't
seem... Like Denver?
Yeah, Denver would have been nice.
Yeah, I would have liked to see that finals matchup as well. Future finals matchup as well.
Right, or like a Toronto maybe, but...
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you don't... No, no, I'm going to challenge you there.
Okay.
Toronto should not play the Bucks. They should play Golden State.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
Yeah, but we'll get back to Golden State because I'm done with this LeBron Golden State thing. I'm done.
You and me both, my friend. Well, luckily, we are done with it because it's not going to happen in the finals this year.
That's true.
Unless, of course, LeBron forces the Warriors to trade themselves to the Eastern Conference, seeing as he is a general manager. I don't know if that's possible, though.
No. Well, I'm not going to put it past, you know, the line of realism at this point.
Right, correct.
Dear Adam Silver, for my Christmas gift, I wish.
I am not sick of losing enough to the Warriors in the finals. Please force them back to the East so we can have year five.
More. Yeah. Yeah. Please, sir, can I have some more?
All right. Any other takes about Knicks Bucks, or should we move on to the second game?
I mean, I think it's... I'm going to be serious for a second. I think it's really important for the Knicks to just stay ready after this game, because I'm assuming that a lot of their players will definitely need treatment, both, you know, physically and psychologically.
Sure.
After Giannis completely and utterly makes a fool of them.
Yep.
So I think it's really, really imperative that they get the proper care that they need afterwards.
Very in the holiday spirit of you. So altruistic. I mean, look, Kevin Knox, let's talk about Kevin Knox for a second, because he legitimately has been, you know, again, he was very kind of inconsistent after he came back from the ankle injury. In the last seven games, he's averaging 20 points on 43% shooting, almost seven rebounds, an assist, three threes a game.
Yeah.
0.7 steals, 0.4 blocks. Like, you know, he took the league by storm at Summer League, and then the hype kind of petered out because he got injured so quickly, and then again...
35% shooting in Summer League, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, you know, he looked like a potential steal, and, like...
Oh, yeah, 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 for sure.
Now, you know, now he's started six of the last seven games. He was, you know, he only started three prior to this, so it seems like the Knicks have finally... They've given up the ghost. They're like, all right, even if Kristaps comes back, we're not making the playoffs this year. Now right. It's time to get our young guys some burn. Let's play Kevin Knox 35, 36 minutes a night. Let him take his lumps now. So then next year, when Kristaps is back, when we have Kevin Durant in the fold, and we have Kevin Knox, like, those guys are ready to go right away.
I liked what you did right there.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Silently. But no, honestly, look, I crab on the Knicks a lot, and they are horrible right now.
Right.
But they do have a very solid foundation, because right now they're getting, you know, the fringe guy calls right. Like, yeah. They're finding those guys who are just turning, you know, a profit for them in terms of what they produce on the court versus their contractual status. Like, Alonzo Trier, you and I talked about Trier before the draft, where we had him as one of the guys that if he went undrafted or even late in the second round, he would be a complete steal.
Yeah.
And I think I even went as far as said, you know, I would probably reach for him late in the first.
Mm-hmm.
He went undrafted, and New York immediately picked him up, and look what he's doing. Like,
yeah.
11 points a game. Like, fair enough, he's very much an ISO scorer. He's very much offensive-minded. He's not one of those two-way players.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. Like, because given where he was and given how you didn't, you know, use a pick on him and the low salary, what he's doing right now is perfectly fine.
Right.
And for a rebuilding team to hit on those margin players,
mm-hmm.
that's just crucial for their overall development and their overall progress in a rebuild.
Yep.
So good on the Knicks for actually doing this. And I think a part of it might be, you know, that James Dolan has kind of stepped away from the team a little bit.
Yeah.
And not being in the day-to-day. Like, look what you can accomplish if your incompetent owner just steps away.
Right. Damian Dotson, too.
Noah Vonleh.
Yeah. Like, they do. You're right. They do have a nice group of, like, complementary rotation players. They just need their one or two stars. But they have one in Kristaps. He's just hurt. And, like, most teams would be bad if their top player went down. Look at the Grizzlies last year. Mike Conley goes down. They win 22 games. He comes back. They're a playoff team again.
Right, and I like the fact that you didn't include Tim Hardaway in this, like, as a star.
No,
God. Like, we all know, right, but the thing is, like, we have a guy who's averaging 21 a game, and he's still, like, an afterthought, we're still very optimistic about the Knicks, which is, that just proves a point to me. That proves that that guy is probably not meant long for the Knicks. He's a trade asset.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're still optimistic, even though you have this guy who's earning, like, What did Hardaway sign for? Was it 72 million over 4 years?
Yeah.
So, you know, and even then, like, there's optimism to be found. So good on the Knicks. Like, you're bad right now. Good Lord, you're bad. But moving forward, it's fine.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, let's move to the second game. OKC versus Houston.
Oh, God.
This game, so this is what I'm saying. This is like one of those games that comes out in like August or September, whenever the Christmas Day schedule was announced. And that looks like the second best team versus the third best team in the West.
Right.
So you're like excited about it. You know, that this is a team, a Rockets team that won, 65 games last year that, you know, pushed the Warriors to 7. We were concerned about the losses they suffered this summer, Ariza and Luke Mbamute, but we figured, you know, they're not going to fall off to the extent that they have. Now, you have a Rockets team that is barely, you know, if the playoffs started today, they would be in, but they're the last team in. Chris Paul is now out for a couple weeks at least with a hamstring injury. I mean, James Harden is, you know, still doing James Harden things. He looks incredible, as he usually does. Clint Capella has been very good as well, but Eric Gordon's been a tire fire. They did just sign Austin Rivers, so he's not going to Shanghai, as you suggested last episode.
Well, you know, the Rockets do have ties to Shanghai.
That's true. Maybe that'll be their G League. They'll just send him there instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Yao, we finally got him in the fold. What can we do?
Well, so let's talk about the Rockets first. Do you think, I mean, we don't know how long Chris Paul's going to be out, but at least a few weeks. Obviously, I'm not even going to say, like, can Austin Rivers replace Chris Paul? Because the answer is no. You know, it's Chris Paul.
Right.
But do you think Austin Rivers does provide them with, like, somewhat of a safety blanket for the next few weeks, at least?
I would just more call it, like, a healthy body.
Yeah.
to make sure that they can actually roll out a roster.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I mean, look, Rivers is not bad, per se. He's just... He was overpaid. And he has a tendency to believe that his role is way higher than it should be.
Yeah.
So I think it's a lot about, you know, the perception of himself and what he can do as a player. Like, when he's down and dirty defensively, he's actually an asset. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of him, when he thinks that he has to shoot 15 times a game, he just doesn't exert himself defensively to the same extent. So when he comes to the Rockets, I hope D'Antoni, like, sits him down, and I hope, well, he's at with the Rockets now, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I hope that D'Antoni sat him down and went, you know what, we're going to need your energy, but we're not going to need your energy to go out and take, you know, 15, 16 shots and be like an ISO player and a high right. volume guy. No, you know, we need you to bring energy defensively. Like, and if you have layups and you can, you know, back cut and whatnot and an open three, fine. Like, take those shots. That's completely fine. Just score within the flow of the offense, bring energy, clamp down on defense. That's all I want to see.
Yeah. Right. I would hope that playing next to James effing Harden, that he's not like, oh no, I'm on the same level. I'm the best player on this team. Like,
right, right.
You know, hopefully, I am interested to see once Chris Paul comes back, how he and Rivers coexist, because it seems like there was some not so great history between them on the Clippers. Although, you know, like, yep. I think Michael Eaves of ESPN reported on that at some point, but it also seems like a lot of that may have been tied to, you know, Austin was playing for his dad. So I think a lot of Chris's gripes were like, he felt that Doc had some preferential treatment for Austin over the rest of the team, which...
No, you right. don't say.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, maybe he does feel a little more strongly about his son. So with Mike D'Antoni, hopefully that's not an issue. It is going to be interesting to see how he fits in there. And, I mean, look, the Rockets just didn't have really any alternative. I mean, it was like Michael Carter Williams and Brandon Knight.
You know? Yeah. No, that was unfortunate. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's not like Austin Rivers doesn't have a spectacularly high ceiling, but I think he has a higher floor than either of those two guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. What I'm sitting here thinking is, so Chris Paul brought in one of his best buds, Carmelo Anthony, who yeah. lasted 10 games.
Yeah.
Now he's getting Austin Rivers there, a guy who he had issues with.
Right.
What does that mean, right? No, I think you're right. I hope that it was a question of Doc, honestly, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and more so that inflated contract and the added minutes. Like, if Austin is just given a role that fits his talent,
yeah,
that's fine, you know, yep. but he has to accept it himself as well. Like, right. it's a two-way street. Yeah. Right. But it sure as hell an improvement in front of, you know, Mario Carter-Williams and Brandon Knight. I mean, what, right. combined, they played 22 games.
Yeah, yeah. It's I not mean, great.
Yeah, no. They need some sort of guard help.
Yeah.
Because right now, James Harden is being Derrick Rose.
Yeah, yep. And so the Rockets, I mean, they had a brutal start to the season, but they have actually come on somewhat hot as of late. They've won 6 of their past 7. A lot of those were at home, but they beat Portland, the Lakers, the Grizzlies, the Jazz, the Spurs. They lost by 2 points at Miami. They beat the Wizards, whoop-de-doo. But the Wizards with Trevor Ariza, I guess, so that was actually somewhat notable. So they've beaten a lot of good teams lately. Do you think they have any chance against OKC without Chris Paul?
I mean, yeah. It's the NBA. Yeah. Everyone has a chance at anyone. And here's the thing. When it comes to Christmas games specifically, mm-hmm. just to preface this, I don't really care about the result there. I care about the entertainment factor because it's just past Christmas. You're sitting there eating like leftover turkey sandwiches, or in my case, you know, leftover duck sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And like, you just want to kick back and watch some entertaining ball. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the results mm-hmm. for this particular day.
Right.
But I think both teams have an equal shot, honestly, because you know, Houston is still a powerhouse offensively.
Yeah.
Like, they're still making and taking the most threes. And then you have OKC, who's, the last time I checked, they were at least in the bottom 5, I want to say, in 3-point field goal percentage and mm-hmm. makes. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, going back to what Popovich said, I think a couple of weeks ago, whereas, you know, frequently when you look at a game, you can find the winner in terms of who hits the most threes. Right. I think that was an oversimplification. I don't think it's that simple.
Yeah.
I think there's way more to it. But I do think that he leans up on a point that is somewhat true.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, talk to the Clippers after they hit like 17 of 22 and still lost against the Warriors.
Right. That's the Warriors, though.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, but yeah, you're right. You're right. The Thunder are 26th in three-point makes, 28th in three-point shooting percentage.
Mm.
I think the interesting matchup, at least, that I'm excited to watch is Paul George versus James Harden. Paul George on D versus James Harden on O, because the Thunder did use him as Harden's primary defender in their first matchup this season. The Thunder held the Rockets to a season-low 80 points. This was back on November 8th.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. It was like it was just a absolute smothering performance. Mm-hmm. You know, Harden still, he got his, but not efficiently. And the Rockets just didn't have anyone else. And now with Paul out specifically, it feels like if Paul George plays the defense he played that first matchup, he's just going to cut off the head of the snake. And I don't know where the offense is coming from for Houston.
Right. And it's not like James Harden is going to go back on that and cut the head off the snake on the other way. Like, right. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought up Paul George. Yeah. Because I'm still seeing Thunder Twitter insist upon itself in regards to Russell Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's still the best player. He's still, you know, the top dog. Mm. Can we please acknowledge what is true right now? That the best player in OKC is by far Paul George.
Oh, like I won't go this far.
Oh, come on, man.
Not by far.
26 points a game, 8 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 2 steals, makes almost 3.5 threes a game.
Yeah,
has a true shooting percentage of almost 59.
Yeah,
Russ has a true shooting percentage of 48.
I know. Yeah, he's been awful from three this year, in particular.
And the free throw line, and like he's just. I'm gonna say it, okay. Russ is in a decline.
Uh-oh.
Look at after the MVP year. Mm. Look up Russ. Have his numbers up.
Yeah.
Look at the free throw specifically. It went from, I believe, 84 to 73.7 down to 60.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the skills are not there to back up the lacking, the lack of explosivity. Like, he is becoming, you know, one step slower, and he just doesn't have the skill set anymore.
His explosiveness wouldn't affect his free throw shooting.
I mean, that's true. That's been good. Yeah, like there are different areas of it.
Right, but
that was
right.
Just one example.
His free throw. If you're concerned about anything on the free throw angle, aside from the shooting, he's just drawing a lot less free throw attempts. As you like, the MVP,
which might be a good thing this year.
Yeah, right. But like the MVP season, he had 10.4. And he hit it at 84.5%. Last year, 7.1, as you said, at 73.7%. This year, 5.4, which he hasn't been that low since his second season. Mm. He's had at least 6 free throw attempts per game in each of the last 8 seasons. And yet he's shooting a career worst 60.5% from the line.
What I'm pointing out, or what I'm trying to say, is rather that because he's playing in a way that is out of rhythm for him now. Mm-hmm. Because he just doesn't get to the basket as easily as he once did.
Right.
Like, he's not this overpowering presence anymore.
Yeah.
And it feels like because of that, his entire game is just out of whack.
Mm.
If you look at the way he shoots threes now,
mm-hmm.
like, he just doesn't get his legs under him in the same way anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he is, and he's doubting himself as well as a shooter, which he probably should, because he never really got that part down.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's a career 30.8% three-point shooter.
I think he's in a free-fall mode. Mm. I think he is doing everything he can to collect those triple-doubles just to kind of keep himself relevant.
I mean, he's also leading the league with 2.6 steals per game.
You know what? I'm going to say it. You know, I think that's the Paul George effect.
Yeah, he just cheats out.
Look at how much he cheats out.
Yeah.
Like, Paul George is the guy who is just the staple on that team.
I'll at least, like, I don't want to go into whether Paul George or Russell Westbrook is, like, the best player on that team or whatever. I mean, I think they're both.
Oh, just because you have people in your mentions?
I mean, I still think it's probably Russ, but it's really close.
Come on.
I'll say this. Paul George has never been better than he is this season, and especially like as of late, since the start of December. Let's go there. He's averaging, it's 11 games. He's averaging 31.4 points on nearly 52% shooting, 9 rebounds, nearly 5 assists, more than 2 steals, almost 4 threes a game. Like, I don't think he's going to win MVP. I still think it's Giannis's to lose. But, like, if he keeps playing at this level, he'll at least have a legit case to be a top 5 MVP finisher. Like,
oh, for sure.
I think you could at least make the argument that, like, I mean, I guess, is that what you're saying? Like, Paul George this year is playing better than Russell Westbrook this year? Or
what? No, I'm not saying from a career perspective, obviously. Yeah,
but, like, I guess because he's younger, too, you're saying moving forward?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Like, right now, look, even last year, I thought PG-13 was better.
Yeah.
But I think it was closer then. Like, right. It was at least a debate. I don't think it's a debate this year.
Yeah.
I don't think it's close this year. And next year, I think it's going to be such a disparity between them that it's going to be insane. And also, when I said that Dame Lillard was better than Westbrook, like, you were like, oh, your mentions.
Right.
Yeah, my mentions. My mentions said, Mort, you're right.
I think that Westbrook hate in general has gone too far. But
from me or overall?
No, overall.
Oh, okay.
But that said, like, there's a legit argument. I'm not saying you're 100% wrong here. I think it's fair to argue this either way because, like, again, Paul George has never been better. Like, this is, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves and just his impact. It's not even, like, you don't even need to look at just the per game numbers. It's like, he is single-handedly against the Jazz the other night. You know, they were really struggling. He comes and leads like a 20-3 run or something like that, single-handedly. I mean, he's like grabbing the game by the horns finally.
I think the best way to put it from my perspective is, you know how you have to bridge, you know, the stats and the eye test?
Yeah.
Like, those two have to make sense together.
Yeah.
For me, when I watch OKC, it does with Paul George, but it doesn't with Westbrook. That's what I lean back. That's where I fall back on. Like, the numbers clearly look a lot better than his impact.
Yeah.
And then when you dig into the analytical stuff, you also see, he's a problem, but not in a good way.
Right.
Like, you don't hear opponents go, oh, Russell Westbrook is a problem. No, people are actively attacking him right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, because he's not Paul George.
Right.
Like, look, to your credit, Paul George currently leads the league in real plus minus, according to ESPN. Westbrook is 33rd. So, like, there's your argument right there if you want to say Paul George has been better this year. I mean,
yeah. Look, I'm not saying that Russ is, like, some sort of G League player.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, like, a question of, I think both of those guys are in roles that maximize what they're being asked to do. Like, Russ, as an MVP, in his MVP year, he had to take 7 threes a game, which is just not what he should be doing. He's not a good shooter. Like,
and he hit them, though, that year.
Yeah.
That was the weird part. He drained 200 dribbles.
Right, at 34%. I mean, still not a super efficient shot. But, like, so Paul George could be that top scorer, kind of the closer. And Russ could just be more of a facilitator this year, which he's, again, he leads the league in assists for the second straight year. It's the fourth year in a row he's above 10 assists per game.
Mm-hmm.
I think just, like, the MVP version of him is not coming out as much as it once did because they don't need him to. Like, they have Paul George now, and that would be dumb for him to take 30-plus field goal attempts when you have Paul George. Like, that's why you bring in Paul George.
So, what's the excuse when they had Durant?
He was younger. He didn't know better.
You know what? I'm actually going to buy that. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. I think there could definitely be a component of that. I'm on board with that. That's fine.
Good. Thank you. All right, let's move to the third game now. Philly at Boston. Because we didn't get enough of this in the playoffs or on opening night or in the playoffs this upcoming season.
Yeah. So Aaron Baines is going to hit how many threes?
Aaron Baines is out. Thank you.
He's out, right. I forgot. That's right.
Ogre broke his hand.
Yep. That's true. That's true. Okay. So, yeah. Oh, we're going to have this during prime time Christmas game, and we're going to be seeing it for like 7 games.
Yeah.
In the spring. Yeah, I look forward to that.
Yeah. I mean, so we haven't seen Jimmy Butler with the Sixers against the Celtics. So that...
This is true.
That does add some intrigue to this game. And Aaron Baines is out, so he will not hit 17 corner threes, and I won't break my television, which is also great. I mean, look, the Celtics started really... I mean, they were very underwhelming at the start of the year. Brad Stevens has tinkered with his rotations. He's put Marcus Smart in the starting lineup. They've really seemed to... I mean, they caught fire for a while. They hit... They won 8 games in a row and then, you know, lost a couple bad ones to Detroit, Phoenix, got smacked by Milwaukee, bounced back Sunday with the win over Charlotte. So it seems like they're starting to find their groove a little bit. They've still got, I mean, one of the deepest teams, if not the deepest team in the NBA. So how much do you think Butler plays a factor here? Do you think he could be kind of the equalizer the Sixers need? Because they, you know, they lose in 5 games in the playoffs. They got spanked opening night. I think it was like 105-87, something like that. I mean, this matchup was not as close as it needed to be if the Sixers thought they were legitimate championship contenders, but now they have Jimmy Butler.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, this is why they brought him in.
Yeah.
He's going up against, you know, elite wings, and it's his job to defend them while still be a playmaker on the other end and be a scorer and be like a tone setter. So obviously this is a test. And you could argue that through that spectrum, like, this is going to be interesting of a game to watch because now you have a legitimate case on your hands. I just, look, there's so many wings on Boston. Yep. There's so many wings. Like, you can't ask Jimmy to handle, you know, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Like, it's just too much. So you need to have Ben Simmons swing down. You need to have Wilson Chandler or, you know, whoever, Landry Shamet, who's not a strong defender by any stretch.
Right.
Like, you know, and I believe Wilson, he didn't even play against the Raptors, right?
Yeah, he was out. I'm not sure.
So he might.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his status is for the game. He's been, I mean, to be honest, he like has been somewhat underwhelming this whole year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a warm body. but yeah, it looks like he hasn't been. I don't see a status update for tomorrow yet. He had a left quad contusion, which caused him to miss the Raptors game. So yeah, he has like the length that they'll need. But that speaks to the like whoever speaks to your point. It's like they have Jimmy, they have Ben, and
that's about it.
Right. And this is going to be, I think that's kind of where this, that's what's going to decide this game tomorrow, I think, will be. Like, you could argue, is it fair to say the Sixers have 3 of the top 4 players in this game?
I think that's fair. What I also think is fair is that you can argue whether they complement each other.
Oh, I mean, that's, yeah, that's a whole other story. I was going to say, outside of those top 3, and J.J. Redick is good as well, but, like, no championship contender. Like, would Furkan Korkmaz be getting minutes in Toronto?
No.
Would he be getting minutes for Golden State?
No.
Would he be getting minutes for Boston?
I don't think so.
Or Milwaukee?
Milwaukee, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
But, like, that's kind of my point, is, like, they've got a good top 3 or top 4 with J.J. Redick, and then it falls off fast.
Yeah. You
know, like, it, that's where Markel Fultz's absence, even if he can't hit threes, again, he's like 6'4", he's got a 6'10 wingspan. He can at least give you something on defense. That's where not having Jair Smith, who's been out
all year
because he's a Sixers rookie and needs to have some stupid medical malady. He's out all year. We don't know when he's going to come back. So they're having, and now, you know, you trade Covington and Saric for Jimmy Butler, which is a trade you make 10 times out of 10, just because getting that third star is what you've been lusting after this whole time. But right. It left them very thin outside of their top four. So now they're having to rely on Wilson Chandler, Mike Muscala, TJ McConnell, Landry Shamet, Furkan, all of whom they're kind of like one-dimensional players. They're yes. good at certain things, but Brad Stevens in Boston is going to, anytime Landry Shamet's on the floor, they're going to go right at him. Anytime Furkan Korkmaz is on the floor, they're going to go right at him.
Right. They need two-way players.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. They need role players who can play both ends of the court. They don't have that currently, and Boston have those guys.
Right. Yeah.
And right.
I think that's kind of where it's going to decide this game. It's like, I don't think Sixers fans should be going into the game expecting a W necessarily, just because
right.
like depth is going to win out at some point.
I will throw this in here, though.
Okay.
The Joel Embiid factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right, so he's had his troubles, I think it's fair to say, against Al Horford.
Yes, yes.
Al Horford has outsmarted him several times.
Yeah.
But I do think that JoJo has gotten a lot better, a lot more clever on the court in terms of his decision-making.
Yes.
So if this is going to be a ball game, like a real ball game, he has to just, you know, grab that lunch off of Horford's hands.
Yeah.
And just say, you know what? I'm taking us all the way. I'm going to go into the post, and I'm going to foul out every one of your UMFers in this game.
Right.
I'm going to end up taking 25 free throws. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm just going to score every time down low, whether it's a field goal or it's a couple of free throws. I am just going to foul every one of you out. That's my way of doing it.
Right.
Like, really, that's the fallback option.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily great, but it's an option at the very least.
Right. Oh, no, I think there's no question, especially with Baines out. If the Sixers want to win, that's how they have to play. They have to play
right.
inside out through Embiid. And
1985 basketball?
Yeah. I mean, he's bigger than them. Like, Horford, as you said, he's had his trouble before. Horford's really crafty. I mean, he's just a good seasoned vet. But without Baines, like, Baines has given Embiid trouble just because he's, like, really physical and matches up size-wise very well. Without him, the Celtics don't have that kind of antidote. So they're going to, you know, they'll throw some like double teams and triple teams at him. But as you right. said, his decision making has been better. I was heartened by his comments the other night where he basically was like, I don't like shooting threes. Like, I do it because we need it. But he's been in the mentality now where, and I noticed this a couple times against the Raptors the other night, you know, they're missing three starters. It's not a landmark win for the Sixers, but the Celtics were out. Ibaka didn't play and Valanciunas didn't play. So Embiid knew he had a size advantage. So he catches the ball sometimes wide open at the 3-point arc. Usually that's when he would let fly and, you know, more likely right. than not, he would miss it. This time he would catch it and then just immediately go to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he hasn't taken a three in either of the last two games.
I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Because as long as he just once in a while just steps out there to remind people, you know, I can shoot this.
Right.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You don't need to go out there and, like, from a statistical perspective, like, take five threes a game at a bare minimum. Like,
right.
you don't need that. Take right. them within the flow of the offense. That's fine. If you have a wide open shot, like, take it. But if you have the option of going inside against, you know, a 6'9 center
mm-hmm.
or whatever, like, if Jason Tatum ends up on you off
right.
a switch.
Right.
Like, you go in there and you break his arm going through the basket. Like, obviously, you do whatever you can to just murder fools in the post.
Right. Yeah, like, yeah. a lot of these bigs who are shooting threes now, they're doing it because that's the modern NBA, but they're also not 7'2", 280 pounds or whatever Embiid is listed as.
And furthermore, and I've raised this point before on this podcast, I think because of the evolution of the three-pointer with, you know, the stretch four and the stretch five, and, you know, basically the stretch big,
mm-hmm.
you don't have big men who are great, necessarily great post defenders anymore.
Mm-hmm.
because people just don't go down there to the same extent.
Right.
So the whole idea is, oh, I have to be able to switch. Yeah. Oh, I have to be able to hedge. I have to be able to guard point guards. I have to be able to do this and this and that. Whereas straight up post defense, you might actually come in and, oh, there's a guy who's like right in my face.
Right.
You know, two feet away from the basket. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I think if when you have one guy, like if you put Shaq in this league today, prime Shaq.
Oh, God.
Right. He would average 38 points.
Right. Right. And that's the way Embiid needs to play. He needs to pretend exactly. He's prime Shaq because he's really the closest thing physically that we've seen since that, right? I mean, maybe
yes.
Dwight Howard, I guess, had a case, but he never really developed.
No.
Yeah, he never developed the post moves.
Well, I'm sorry to cut you off, but Dwight, even though he's listed at 6'11",
yeah,
is closer to 6'9". Like, he's Ben Wallace size more so than Shaq size.
Yeah.
Even though, ironically, like, Ben was listed at 6'9", he was actually 6'7". So it's like, yeah. But, you know, you catch my drift.
Right.
Like, JoJo is legitimately in that same stratosphere in terms of size. Like, yeah. He is the first guy we've seen since Shaq who has the combination of raw size, mm-hmm. athleticism, and touch and feel.
Yeah.
And that is also why, I apologize, I have to mention it, it's inexcusable that he's shooting 48% from the field.
And that's what he said about just shooting right. the threes. He was like, he said, I need to shoot 50%. Like, he said it is inexcusable that I'm shooting this low. So he's, like, cutting threes. As you said, he's not going to cut them out entirely. He'll take them at times when he needs to, but, like, he's averaging a career-high 3.8 this year, but he's shooting less than 28% on him. I mean,
right.
Remove threes from his shot selection, and I bet he's closer to 50, if not above 50%.
While I agree with you, there's just another layer to it, because only 33.6% of his shots comes within 3 feet of the basket.
Okay.
That's just way too low. Like, if you compare it to his teammate, Ben Simmons, that's almost 59%.
Yeah. Because Ben Simmons can't shoot a jumper.
Right. Speaking of, I'm glad you said that because I was talking to you earlier on this podcast about what I don't care about the results for tomorrow night. I care about the entertainment factor. I want, if I am going to be invested in, you know, Philly Boston, all that has to happen is Ben Simmons write out a tweet that says, I'm going to take 10 three pointers tomorrow.
I think Boston would happily accept that.
Yeah, I just want to see it now. Yeah. He hasn't taken a single three this year. Yeah. I want it. Like, you know what? He could just say, at some point tomorrow, I'm going to be shooting a three.
Right.
Just one. Right. You know, it's fine. Just, I want to see one. Come on, Ben.
He did.
It's Christmas. Just let it fly. Let Santa work his magic, okay?
He did hit a turnaround jumper against Toronto the other night.
Hey, progress.
I know, right? It's sad that I have to, like, track that. Like, oh, he shot more than 8 feet away from the basket. Yay! Good job, Ben.
Oh, I didn't even know it was that far out. I haven't seen it. How far away?
The free throw line.
Oh, my word.
I know.
Is this where I go Michael Scott in your ass and go, it's happening, it's happening?
No, because it's not happening. All right, Mort. Let's move to the game you're most excited for. Los Angeles Lakers are taking on the two-time defending champion Golden State Warriors. LeBron versus the Warriors again. Yeah,
I'm so upset we can't curse on this podcast anymore.
Is there anything you're excited about here?
No.
It's LeBron's first time with the Lakers against the Warriors.
I don't care. I know who LeBron is. Doesn't change who he is.
But do you know who LeBron's supporting cast is against the Warriors?
I don't care.
The Lakers, I know who they are. The Lakers did keep it somewhat competitive against the Warriors last year. They played two games. They lost. They went 0-4. But their two games at home both went to overtime. And they didn't have LeBron.
That's nice. I don't care.
NBA, you got to give me something. I'm trying to be your hype man here, and I'm working with Morton Easer Scrooge on the other side.
Look. If the NBA were going to get me hyped, then they should replace Lakers-Warriors with, like, Toronto-Denver.
Yeah.
I am so over the whole LeBron versus Golden State angle. I'm done.
Yeah.
I don't want it anymore. Look, we know what's going to happen. Like, for, you know, the game is going to come on and it's going to be like the first 20 minutes of the game is going to be like, oh, LeBron lost us. Now he's with a new team. Let's go to the LeBron narrative. Right. And while we're at it, let's look at Kevin Durant and let's compare their stats. Yeah. Who are closer? Oh, and will they join forces next year in Los Angeles? All the subplot. Dude. It's, yeah. It's just over with.
Yeah.
It's done. We've heard this narrative for so many years. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care anymore. So sorry, NBA, but you know, you can't help Ryan make this more attractive right now. I am Mr. Grinch. I admit it. It's just no, I'm out on that game.
I think the entertaining part from my perspective is I saw some clips going around last night where, you know, reporters were asking the Lakers about this game. And like, so one of them asked Rajon Rondo, does this game take on any more importance given who you're facing? And he's like, no, it's just a regular season game. I don't care. It counts the same as every other regular season game.
Yep.
And then they asked LeBron, like, does it mean anything more? And he's like, I think they asked, can you use this as a measuring stick? And he's like, no. they're the two child champions. We're, you know, we've gone 2-4 in our last six. Like, we're nowhere near their level. So it's like the Lakers are already, like, they've accepted that they're just going to get routed here. But they're just, like,
trying to soften. Oh, now I'm even more excited.
Yeah, now they're just, like, softening expectations. Like, don't panic. Don't fire Luke Walton when we lose by 25.
Yeah. I mean, look, I get that it can be very exciting to see Kyle Kuzma make a running hook shot over Kevin Durant that's going to be overanalyzed by Lakers fans for seeing 14 hours afterwards. But right. I mean, I'm just not there. I would like to see the NBA shake this day of the year up a little bit. Like, look, this is the perfect game to actually talk about the teams that's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Like, why are we having a Christmas Day slate of games that doesn't include the Toronto Raptors? Please.
I guess.
Like, let me just finish because okay. There's no way the NBA was sitting there going, oh, they might implode.
Right. No.
Like, they cannot use lack of potential success as an excuse because they have the Knicks in there. Right. The freaking Knicks.
That's fair.
So, I mean, look, they got Kawhi.
Yeah.
They knew. They knew this was going to be a great-ass team.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we here? With another LeBron / Warrior stance. Why are we here with, you know, following that game? The Blazers and the Jazz.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the Toronto perspective, I think the NBA probably just, like, didn't know what was up with Kawhi. Like, was he going to play this year? Was an open question going into training camp. It was a dumb question, because of course he was, mm-hmm. but like, you know, there was the risk, I guess, that his quad flared up again and he had another lost season like he did last year, and then it would be last year's Raptors without DeMar DeRozan, in which case they would get routed. But yeah, like,
right.
In retrospect, like, do I wish the NBA had flex scheduling like the NFL does, and do I wish, like, the NBA could just change opponents and, like, flex Toronto into this game? Oh, absolutely.
Wait, hang up. So, I don't know a whole lot about the NFL.
Okay. So
I did not know they had flex schedules. Educate me.
So, it does not work the way I just suggested. The NFL, so, like, they can move, because all the games are on Sunday, minus, right. like, a couple games on Thursday or Monday, Saturday, a couple times.
Right.
So, if a team is, you know, one team gets the Sunday night game at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, or two teams do, whatever. There's one game at 8:20. So right. They assign all of those games out at the beginning of the season. If one of those teams was supposed to be good, like the San Francisco 49ers, I think were in one of these later season Sunday night games. Mm-hmm. Their quarterback tore his ACL, their top running back tore his ACL. They just went to the toilet. The NFL can move a game into that Sunday night slot and make it, you know, like, choose a more appealing game and, like, push one of the bad teams out. So, like, you know, say there were 10 games on Christmas Day and, like, 5 nationally televised ones for the NBA.
Yeah.
The NBA could have pushed the Warriors-Lakers game out and, like, put Toronto-Denver in or something like that.
Oh. Now, that would be interesting. Yeah. The thing is, with the NBA, it's a nightmare because there's so that many more games, right. I should say.
Yeah. So yeah. There's no good way to do it. Like, I'm with you. I'm not super psyched about this game because we know how it's going to end. And at least in years past, you know, Cleveland Warriors, yeah, it got boring after a while. But, like, at least that could have been a finals preview. Like, this year, this Lakers-Warriors can't be a finals preview. At best, it's a conference finals preview. And I think that's even probably a stretch.
Yes.
So, like, I would have liked to see a Toronto-Warriors or, like, a Lakers-Celtics. Pelicans would have been fun. I was going to say, like, Lakers-Celtics just to, like, play up that old rivalry thing. I mean, I think
right.
The reason it is what it is LeBron's the most marketable athlete. The Lakers are one of the most marketable franchises, and the Warriors are the two-time defending champions. And you combine all of that, ratings!
And you still get something that is very boring.
Right, but ratings!
Yeah. Oh, man. No, look, I get the logic behind it. I do. Yeah. It's just... you just know that this is all about the narrative again.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh, we know what, you know, what people click on in terms of articles. We know that ESPN likes to do the whole LeBron, Golden State dance. We know all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put a game up there so we can really just dig into it.
Right.
Like, you've just heard it a million times before. I'm done with it. And I think I said as much as last year when they put up, like, you know, the Cavs and the Warriors. Like, why? Just, you're this the most progressive sports league on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize, you know, who these young great players are. Like, look at Doncic and the Mavs. I mean, come on. Would you not have loved a, you know, Denver Nuggets Dallas Mavericks game on Christmas? Jokic versus Doncic.
I'm so sad we don't have Luka Doncic on Christmas.
Right?
So sad.
I mean, yeah, and then I get the argument there. Well, nobody knew Doncic was going to be good because, you know, he didn't attend college.
And so. He's fat.
And he's fat. He's fat. We don't even know if he can dunk at basketball because he's European and thus very unathletic. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Yeah, you know what would make this matchup exciting? If Anthony Davis were on the Lakers.
Oh, God. Here we go. Yep. You know what? That's it. Yeah, I'm sure that's it. That's why they don't have the Pelicans, because right after this podcast is done recording, AD is flipped somehow to the Lakers, and he's ready in uniform already by tomorrow, even though that completely exceeds league protocol.
Yep. Right. Yeah, he's going to tell the Pelicans he's rejecting their Supermax. He's doing it 6 months early to give them time before the trade deadline to really juice up the offers.
Of course.
Then he's going to be in uniform tomorrow. Yeah.
And even then, I still wouldn't care about the narrative.
Yeah. Well, apparently Voldemort, who has been very quiet this season, shockingly quiet, out today and say that the Lakers have enough talent even without Anthony Davis.
Indirectly just hyping up his son.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, Voldemort, as per usual, is very much wrong.
Right. Apparently, he has not been watching his son's team very much this season.
So I think I've said this before. I'm just going to reiterate it. I don't want AD to be moved. I don't want him joining forces like with Boston or LA.
Yeah.
Like, I actually want him to see him in New Orleans. Or at least a team where he's still like the number one guy.
Right.
I don't want him to be Kevin Love. I don't want him to be one of those guys who just, you know, who are so valuable that he's going to come to a team with this very ball-dominant guy who's, you know, dictates everything, and then that's about it. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's going to be, you know, matched up or paired up, with another star, it should be like, you know, a Dame Lillard-type guy. Like,
right.
That would be fun. But if he's going to a team full of stars, like Boston,
mm-hmm.
or to a team with LeBron, like the Lakers, like, I just think his overall game and impact would be, you know, affected and not in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because the Celtics can't trade for him until July because they have Kyrie Irving.
Correct.
And you can't have two designated players.
Unless Kyrie is included.
Right, yeah, unless they trade Kyrie. for Anthony Davis, which makes no sense,
right,
for the Pelicans. And so, like, if the Pelicans are going to trade Anthony Davis this season, which they are not, the mm-hmm. Lakers are the clear favorite. The Pelicans aren't doing anything until they can literally hand him a piece of paper saying, here is $240 million. Oh. Do you want this or do you not? And yeah. So, like, Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report and Albert Namad of Hot Hot Hoops, I think it is. He's, you know, a salary cap expert on Twitter. They've been pointing out ways. Apparently, like, Anthony Davis has a trade kicker that no one knew about until a couple days ago. So there are ways for him to recoup a lot of what he would lose by turning down the Supermax if he is traded. Like, I think
interesting.
I think it's only like $16 million short of what he could, you know, he can get traded, then sign an extension, and then like a 2 or 3 year extension. I forget how many years exactly, but position it so he becomes a free agent after 10 years in the league, at which point he can sign, you know, the 35% max, and then
right.
he's still pretty close to. So, like, the financial, someone is going to get that information to Anthony Davis if they haven't already. Like, the financial bonus that, or financial advantage that the Pelicans have is not nearly as severe as once presumed. And so it does beg to the question of, like, you know, I was seeing Nate Jones of Goodwin Sports tweeting about this last night, about how, like, have we just built the NBA up into such a rings or bust culture that, like, you know, I'd love to see Anthony Davis continue to just dominate in New Orleans. But, like, I don't know what moves they can make to ever build a title contender around him, because they're never going to be bad enough where they get another, like, top five pick, most likely, as long as he stays healthy. And I just right. don't have confidence that that team is going to be able to draw one or two other superstars. So, like, have we gotten to the point where he realizes that? He knows he's not going to win a ring if he stays there, and he's willing to make a move to a LeBron James team just because he's like, screw it. Like, I, you know, he said, there was a, I think it was Sam Amick the other day had the article where he's like, my legacy means more to me than money. Like, I'll sacrifice if I need to.
I mean, I think it's a good point. Yeah. Look, I'm rooting for Kemba Walker to stick in Charlotte.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he's the greatest Hornet we've seen so far. I mean, you could argue that Alonzo Mourning and Larry Johnson were better in their primes, and that's fine, but they didn't have the longevity. Mm-hmm. Like, Kemba Walker, just by longevity and production alone, is arguably, at least, the best Hornet of all time. If he sticks around for the next 4 or 5 years, he's undoubtedly the best Hornet of all time.
Right.
That means something. That has some value as well. Like, we don't want to completely dry up every other team just right. so we can create these, you know, super teams. And again, I'm not actually fearful of that to that extent, because the league has never had as much talent as it does right now.
Mm-hmm.
The concern is if you have, like, the top five, you know, if you have the top 10 players, and you have five on one team and five
yeah.
on the other one.
Yeah.
Like, then it just becomes extremely difficult. And then you can say, oh, well, you still have, you know, two top 20 players on this team. Yeah, that's fine. But that's, you know, the real difference is in the top 10 or the top five. If you have the elites of the elites, those are game changers. Those are season turnarounders. Those are championship level players. Like, you just cannot get around that fact.
Right.
AD is one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be... I mean, this will not be the last time we talk about Anthony Davis's upcoming. I mean, it's not even, he's not even a free agent for another year and a half. But, like,
he's not even playing tomorrow. And we're talking about him for 25 minutes. Yeah.
Naturally. No. Well, you know, he has been. There's been a lot of stuff tying him to the Lakers lately, or at least, like, a lot of smoke starting to point in that direction. So, and hey, again, that's, like, the only thing that could make us interested in Lakers Warriors tomorrow is if Anthony Davis was somehow involved. That's the moral of the story. So basically, if you're, like, you know, because Christmas Day, you're like, you have to spend time with family, and, like, not all of us are as lucky as you, more where all these games are on at night, like Philly Boston at 5:30 right. p.m. Eastern time, like pretty much dinner time for anyone on the East Coast. So you have to be smart about your time, try to figure out where you're going to sneak away from your family. Skip Lakers Warriors.
Yeah.
Just skip it.
Look, that's where I'm going to go to bed because that's at 2 a.m. for me.
Yeah.
So so basically, it's Bucks-Knicks at 6, actually, for me. Then at 9, it's Thunder-Rockets, which I'm really annoyed by because I actually wanted Sixers-Boston instead.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then at 11:30, it's Sixers-Celtics. Then 2 a.m., Lakers-Warriors. 4:30 a.m. in the morning, Trailblazers-Jazz. So, yeah, lucky me, Brian. That's right. Lucky me.
Well, let's move into the final game, Trailblazers-Jazz.
I mean, I would watch that game during a regular season. I would, not live, I would wake up the following morning, and I would put it on League Pass.
Right.
But this is Christmas games. These games are supposed to have a whole, you know, bunch of significance behind them, and snoozeville.
Yeah. I guess the NBA needed to have a West Coast team hosting the game, just because you can't make an East Coast team host a game starting at 10:30, which makes sense.
Right.
But, and like, I guess, you know, people were saying Utah could be the second best team in the West, and like, Portland made the playoffs last year. They were the 3 seed last year. You do have Damian Lillard, who is just an all-star lock, and he's playing better than ever. Yep. Maybe they were hoping Donovan Mitchell was going to take a big step forward and figured it
was. I think,
And like, they thought it was just going to be like two superstar guards going mano a mano. But like, also, the Jazz have a really good defense, which could limit the entertainment value here significantly.
Yeah. I think you hit it all right on the head. And Donovan Mitchell has been struggling. He just hasn't had this, you know, an offensive supporting cast that could consistently rise up and show up. Like, now you have Kyle Korver, who has improved, like, the overall mechanics of the team, I will say.
Yeah.
But, like, there isn't that. You know, who's the second leading scorer? That's Rudy Gobert at 14.6 points a game.
Right.
Like, this is a worse situation than Kemba when you really look at it, where Jeremy Lamb was, like, the second leading scorer. Like, you need a secondary creator in some capacity. And, like, you can throw, hey, Dante Exum can create at me as much as you want, but he's scoring 6.6 points a game.
Right. Yeah, like, Joe Ingles can create.
He can create, but, you know, he's still a low-volume scorer overall,
right,
though.
Right, no, exactly. That's what, like, he can. Do you want him as your number two option offensively?
Right, no. I mean, I'd rather want him create for others. I think he's better at that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, Mitchell, he's just not. He hasn't taken the leap, as you said. And he's been good still. It's just like he set expectations so high as a rookie that this season it's being viewed as somewhat of a disappointment, which is pretty unfair to him. Like, he's 20, like, what 22-year-old averages 20 points a game in his second season? We're like, oh, this guy's like meh.
Apparently Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Right now. Right. Well, yeah. No, it's weird. It's definitely weird. Because I have seen a few areas where he has improved.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting to the line more. And he's doing so in a very analytical manner. Like, when you look at him drive, before he was just very emotional on his drives, where it was just like, oh, I can do this. I believe in my jumping ability, whatever. Where now he's more calculative. Like, he's going to the rim. He's looking for that defender who's jumping up a little bit too early. Like, he's thinking the game out a little bit more. It's just unfortunate that he's less efficient overall. But it's like, he's taking so many, you know, bailout shots. And I will concede he hasn't had great shot selection this year. Like, it's not all about him being put in a bad situation. Not everything. Like, there is a tendency to him to just pull up at weird times and just be a little bit too quick on the trigger. But like you said, 22. Like, I'm not worried about him individually. I'm worried about the Jazz building up a proper team around him. Again, I've mentioned this guy going to the Jazz several times because I love the fit. Like, a Nikola Mirotic, woof. His presence in Utah would that would just allow Mitchell to explode.
Yeah. Right. It goes back to, I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago or even a month ago at this point. Like, the whole Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert thing worked a lot better this year or last year than it did this year. And if you put a stretch four in Favors' place, I think we see a little bit more No, there's probably a lot more spacing for sure.
Yeah.
But the Jazz just might have a much better offense in general. So, I mean, this game could be good. Like, if it comes down, if it's a close game in the last 5 minutes, it probably just turns into a Donovan Mitchell versus Damian Lillard with CJ McCollum playing sidekick as well. Like, that could be really fun.
I'm there for that.
Yeah. But there's also a chance that, I don't think it's going to be a blowout either way. It just feels like this also could just be a really low-scoring game.
It could be because of the Jazz defense, you're thinking?
Yeah.
I do think that Dame's offensive production at this point is going to outweigh that somewhat.
Okay, yeah.
He's too good to be, you know, being thrown into like a 3-14 night, I think.
Yeah.
At least right now. Like, this dude is averaging 27 a game, 6 assists, you know, hitting 3 triples a game, getting to the line at 7 times a game, shooting 89%. Like, he's just uber efficient, and he's just playing so well. We really do not talk enough about Dame as a player right now. And also, I just want to throw this in there. Like, defensively, he's not as bad as he used to be.
Yeah.
Like, he's really putting in the effort. I mean, he's always going to be somewhat limited, and there's definitely a ceiling on his defense.
Right.
But, like, we used to put him and Kyrie in the same sentence defensively.
Right, like, right.
I'm done with that. I mean, I know that Kyrie has gotten better defensively, but a lot of that is scheme.
Yeah.
Because, hey, hi, Brad Stevens.
Yeah.
Like, Dame individually has gotten better. Like, he's reading screens a lot better. He's just thinking the game out more. He's also cut down on his turnovers on the other end, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
Just loving it. And if he's not going to be voted in an all-star...
Oh, no. There's no way.
Right? Yeah. I mean, he's been screwed out of that a couple of times.
I know. I'm like writing something for Fansided right now about who like might make it as a first-time All-Star. So I was trying to figure out, you know, which guys are locks in each conference. Basically, Dame, I think, is a stone cold lock.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
In 2016, 2017, he was averaging 27 and 6.
Yeah.
And 5 boards.
Yeah. I think the Blazers They were worse then, though, because that was the year... Wasn't that the year where Nurkic came over? And, like...
Midway through the season, so they later on.
They were kind of underwhelming for a lot of the year, and I think they were below 500 even going into the All-Star break, and then Nurkic came, and, like, all of a sudden they were good.
Right, but still 27.
Yeah, I mean, I know. But, like, you hate it, and we'll definitely have an All-Star... or a couple All-Star podcasts as we get a little closer to the selection show.
I'm the biggest Grinch.
I know. Well, you hate the team success factors in, but it does. And yeah, I'm looking now. The Blazers heading into the All-Star break that year were 23-33.
I don't think that would be bad enough to exclude him, though.
Right. But like I'm saying, this year it works in his favor that they're... I mean, they're 19-14 right now. You know, they're in the playoff. I mean, literally every Western Conference team aside from the Suns is in the playoff race. But you know, they're
that's so sad.
It's preposterous. But I'm saying, like, they're a much more competitive team this year than they were 2 years ago. So I think that's going to work in his favor. There's no way he's not an All-Star.
Oh my God, I hadn't realized that actually. I'm just looking at literally the picture right now. Like, Phoenix is like the ultimate high school outsider right now.
Yeah. Yep. But
oh, no.
The second worst team is New Orleans at 15-19. It's absurd.
Yeah, they still have a chance. Like, they obviously still have a chance.
Like, they're not... If New Orleans was in the East, they would be a game and a half out.
Phoenix is like that emo kid who's at the same time a very bad jock.
Right.
Who's like still like a 1980s nerd.
Yeah.
Like at the same time. Yeah. Like just all the unpopular types just rolled into one. Oh God. That is unfortunate.
I
haven't even seen that. Yeah, it's really bad.
It's brutal. And to your point about Dame, he is playing, I think much like Paul George, I would argue Dame's probably playing better than ever.
And, yeah.
You know, without him, that Portland team is terrible. So yeah, he would be what I assume is a stone cold lock to make it to the the All-Star game. But the Western Conference snubs for the All-Star game are going to be brutal this year. Like the East, I think you're going to get most of the guys. There will be like one or two snubs because like there's probably like 13 or 14 guys who really deserve it. And there's only 12, you know, 12 selections for Eastern Conference players. The West, it's like some combination of Mike Conley, Luka Doncic, Tobias Harris, De'Aaron Fox. None of those guys, like one of those guys probably makes it in at most.
So glad you mentioned Doncic. I was just about to say, we're going to have a debate later on.
Oh, no.
Like in terms of all-star snubs.
Yeah. No, yeah, he's absolutely on the list. He's like one of those guys. He's one of the guys who could be a first-time all-star because Jokic is in for sure.
Yeah, he should be at least.
I also didn't realize, I was doing research for this thing, guess the last guy to make the all-star game as a rookie.
Blake Griffin.
Wow, well done. Yeah.
Yeah.
In 2010. And he wasn't a rookie because he missed his first season. Right,
he missed the first year.
Yeah. So guess the first actual rookie, Donovan Mitchell, to make it. Not counting Blake Griffin.
Wait, what about Donovan Mitchell?
I'm making fun of his not a rookie thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you just threw him out. So the first one there, Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan was there was one other guy in between, Yao Ming in 2002.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah. Damn it. But yeah, because he got all the Chinese war books. Yeah.
Right. But the point is, it's very, very rare for a rookie to make the All-Star game. So
right, it is. But that's why I want Luka in there, because he's one of the few that actually deserves it. So that's... Oh, we just went off on a tangent here, which is typical of us. But by the way, just you mentioned Dame and you put him in connection with Paul George. Mm-hmm. Ironically, for a couple of years now, I've been wanting to pair those guys on a team.
Well, in the All-Star game, they will.
Yeah, but
Team USA, they will.
Those two guys?
Yeah.
Just with the shooting alone?
Yeah.
Paul George's, you know, all-aroundedness? Like, and they're in the same age bracket? Like, ooh, they would be so, so damn good.
That would be Russell Westbrook for Damian Lillard. Who says no?
Portland, hopefully. Oh, my God. Like, Portland would be asking, so how many first-rounders are you giving up?
Right. Well, you know, we had to do something to spruce up this Portland-Utah game because, again, it's just hopefully next year we get Luka, we get Kawhi, we get Zion, wherever Zion's playing.
And let's hope Zion is healthy. I'm so worried about those knees.
Yeah.
I really am. Like 280 pounds on that frame.
What? Let's just hope he doesn't go to Philly then.
He'd miss his first three seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we're laughing, but it's actually not that funny.
Well, it's just true. It's just completely true. On that note, I think that's a good place to wrap things up. So thank you for tuning in today. Hope you all have a happy holidays. Enjoy the games tomorrow. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all of our latest episodes there. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Happy holidays, Mort.
Well, thank you, Brian. That was not a dig at all. And by the way, just so we don't forget to tell people, if you're wondering about this being the 192nd episode instead of the 991st, we didn't tweet out that last episode. We didn't really promote it at all because we were trying to look at some statistics and trying to create some benchmarking. So if you are surprised by this episode number, you can go back in the feed and you can listen to our latest episode as well.
Yes. Very belated Trevor Ariza trade analysis.
Which you totally still need.
Right.
At this point.
Right. And a lot on the Dylan Brooks, Marshawn Brooks debacle as well.
And now we are covering, you know, the Christmas Day games that are only going to last for like 12 hours. We are just so good right now.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, man.
Later.